Okay, I'd like to call the conference committee to order. Before we get started, we're going to start on the side by sides with the jobs article, and then Senator Dames is in the tax conference committee, so we might want to be just a little bit fluid with the commerce article. I'd like to thank Chair Mahoney. We met last night to work through the agenda. I appreciate your partnership on this, and I know we've had a little bit of a rough start to this committee, but I feel like we're ready to start.
I think you should just come to my union meeting sometime.
I'd love to come to a union meeting. So with that, members, without objection, we'll start with the side-by-side comparison with the jobs articles. If you want to go up to the testifiers table, if that's easier.
Good afternoon. My name is Carlin Doyle Fontaine. I'm Senate Counsel for the Jobs and also the Energy Committee. And I can begin. I don't know if you want to introduce yourselves as well.
Anna Schleen, House Research.
And I'm Ben Weeks. I also work in House Research.
And the thought is that we would start with the document that says on the House side, Article 4, Economic Development Policy. On the Senate side, Article 2, Jobs Policy. I guess at the top it says Jobs, Economic Development Policy.
This is under the Economic Development tab in your binders.
And start the Senate. Yes. So we start on the Senate side. The first provision in Section 1 is would reduce the amount that DEED can retain for the administrative costs for pass-through grants when they administer those. That would reduce it from 5% that they can currently retain to 2%. The next section is also a Senate section, and this would create and codify a new airport infrastructure renewal grant program. It was the Air Grant Program, and that would allow up to 50% of the capital costs of redeveloping existing airport facilities or constructing new ones, and for infrastructure costs, and that would include broadband costs, would be eligible under the new grant program.
If you now flip to the next page, R2, House Section 1, this is House-only language, codifies the Getting to Work Grant Program, which gives grants to nonprofits to provide, repair, or maintain motor vehicles so low-income people can get and keep jobs. If we flip forward to R4, House Section 2, House Only, this increases the maximum grant for the Minnesota Investment Fund from $1 million to $2 million for very large projects and raises the required wage level for all projects from 110% to 125% of the federal poverty level for a family of four. If you flip to R5, this is House Sections 3 and 4, House Only. This raises the required wage level for job creation fund projects from 110% to 125% of the federal poverty level as well. If you go on to page R7, House Section 5, this is House only language. This codifies the Pathways to Prosperity Grant Program, which gives competitive grants to nonprofits to train adults facing employment barriers so they can find jobs. Also on page R7, House Section 6, these are, and which is also Senate Section 3, these are different provisions, however. They require DEED to do a report to the legislature every 2 years, which provides specific information on every workforce development program provided or overseen by the state of Minnesota. Now, the Senate expands this to all economic development programs, not just workforce development programs. And the Senate also renders programs ineligible for future funding if the requested information is not provided. Also, each body requires slightly different information in the report. We turn to page R9, House Section 7. This is House-only language. This replicates the existing job training grants program under Section 116L.42. That program only serves Greater Minnesota, and it creates an exact version that would provide the same sort of training grants in the metro area. If you turn to page R11, House Sections 8 through 13, House-only language. This establishes the Minnesota Call Center Jobs Act, which requires notifying the state before relocating call centers to foreign countries. This requires state agencies to only contract with call centers doing business in the state, and bars employers will relocate call centers from receiving certain state benefits for 5 years.
Going to a Senate-only provision on page R14, Section 4. This new provision would apply to all port authorities and would allow all port authorities to conduct meetings by telephone or other electronic means. And currently only the St. Paul Port Authority is allowed to do that, and this would expand it to allow other port authorities to do that as well. Then we have a same provision for both the House and Senate. On the bottom of it, page R14, Section 14 for the House and Section 5 for the Senate. And this would extend retroactively a 2018 appropriation to the Boyce Fort Tribal Employment Rights Office, TARO, until the end of fiscal year 2019.
Now, if you turn all the way to page R25, as the last one's quite long, you'll find House Section 15, House-only language. This requires DEED to make a report to the legislature on the barriers to employment faced by people with mental illness, the current programs that assist these with these barriers, and how best to improve the employment rate for this population. If you turn to page R26, Section 16, House-only language, creates a pilot project to transition special education graduates into competitive employment. It pays for performance for providing job training, job shadowing, and employment placement. Turn to page R27, House Section 17, House Only. This establishes the Minnesota Innovation Collaborative, a system of supports for entrepreneurs and new technologies, including grants for research and development and training. Turning on to page R32, this is House Section 18, House Only, creates the Child Care Economic Development Grant Program, which gives grants to local communities to increase the availability of child care. We turn to page R34, House Section 19. This is House Only language. It establishes the Community Prosperity Grant Program, which provides grants to nonprofits for economic development projects. On page R36, House Section 20, and Senate Section 6, this is very similar language, making a one-time exception to how local governments can spend repayments for MIF loans. In exchange for transferring 20% of the uncommitted funds to the general state fund, or state general fund, the local government can spend the remainder for any lawful purpose. The only difference between the two sections here is that the House language includes sending the report to the minority chairs of the committees as well, or minority leads of the committees as well as the chairs. So we recommend adopting the House language there. You turn to page R36, House Section 21, House Only, requires a biannual report on all state-funded grants administered by DEED in the prior biennium, including specific information for each grantee.
On page R37 on the Senate side, we have a repealer, and that would be repealing the specific allowance for the St. Paul Port Authority to conduct the meetings via telephone or other electronic means, since all port authorities could do that now.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe the next tab in your binder is family and medical leave, and that is two articles, both entirely House only, that are the paid family and medical leave program that passed the House floor. And following that is a tab that says wage theft, and that has some House only and some Senate language as well. Starting on page R1 and continuing, starting on page R1, there's a house only provision. On R2, which is Senate Section 2, starting at page 53, line 2, there's a Senate-only provision that adds a requirement that before the Department of Labor and Industry may examine employer records, an employee must have made a written demand for that payment. Then on R3, House Sections 2 through 9 are all house-only provisions modifying various statutes related to wage theft. On R6, House Section 10 and Senate Section 3 both modify an existing misdemeanor crime related to wage theft. There are various stylistic and policy differences enough that we thought to classify those as different provisions, though they modify the same section of statute. R7, House Section 11 is a house-only provision that clarifies enforcement of wage and hour statutes. Then on R8, there's another shared House and Senate provision, House Section 12, Senate Section 5. This is the section that prohibits wage theft and modifies an existing statute. And again, because there are various policy differences, we classify them as different. In particular, the Senate requires the intent to defraud, which is the current law, and the House does not. Also on page R8, House Section 13, Senate Section 6 is also classified as different, and generally these both clarify that enforcement of wage theft does not preclude other types of enforcement, but the Senate expressly states that the Commissioner of Labor and Industry may enforce the section, and the House language does not. On R8, House Sections 14 and 15 are House-only changes to various statutes related to wage theft. Then on R9, House Section 16, Senate Section 7, these provisions are the same, and they clarify that the wage theft section does not limit application of other laws. And finally, there's a series of House-only articles or sections beginning on R9, House Sections 17 through 23 that also modify various statutes related to wage theft.
Before we move on, are there any questions? I had one quick question. If we could go back to, you mentioned the definition of intent being current law, but it was my understanding wage theft wasn't defined in current law today. So I just want to make sure that I understand that comment.
Mr. Chair and members, I think right now wage theft as a concept or a term isn't really used in statute. Now we're putting it in statute. It doesn't necessarily say wage theft is as a traditional definition structure, but for all intents and purposes, it's kind of providing what would constitute wage theft. The Senate in the same provision that just kind of had the concept about the prohibited practices that would involve not paying someone what mm-hmm. they were supposed to get paid. So it amends that section, but then puts in the term wage theft and leaves the intent that was already included in prohibited practices.
Thank you. Okay, if there's no other questions, we can move on.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe that the next tab you have either says earn sick, safe and sick time, and that is the House-only two articles related to earn sick and safe time and requiring employers allow employees to earn sick time on an accrual basis and use that, and that's entirely House-only, and identical language has passed the House floor, or is on the House floor. Then after that, I believe, is labor policy, or maybe labor and industry policy.
Uh, On labor and industry policy, Article 8 in the House and Article 3 in the Senate, the first provision is part of a two-part, two sections that will address retainage. This first section would amend the retainage law affecting public contracting agencies, and it looks like the House and Senate, I think in concept, they're kind of going in the same direction. I think maybe there are some provisions that the Senate removed, it, and so I see that they're still on the House side. So I know that there are continued negotiations on this, but there are slight differences. I think in concept, they're kind of going the same direction. So that would be on both Section 1s on the House and Senate side. On page R2 and R3, there are two sections that modify the youth skills training program, and they're basic, sort of some technical changes, and then in Section 3 in both sides on R3, it would specify that grant awards cannot exceed $100,000 per local partnership grant. So it just makes some small changes to that program. On page R4, we have two provisions that would enact the recommendations of the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council, and those are same for both the House and Senate. On page R5, at the bottom of page R5, Section 1, this is a Senate-only provision which exempts minor league baseball players from minimum wage and overtime laws.
On R7, there's a House-only provision related to the Packing House Workers Bill of Rights statute, and it just changes the definition and more clearly defines what meatpacking or person working in the meat industry is. Continuing on R7, there's a similar provision, House Section 7 and Senate Section 4. They both modify disclosure requirements to employees in the meatpacking industry, but the Senate language allows employers to require workers to identify languages that they speak or read fluently and exempts the employer from the disclosure requirements if the worker doesn't comply. Similar to that, on side-by-side page R8, House and Senate Section 8, this also modifies disclosures during recruiting for food processing workers, and it has a similar provision on the Senate side that's somewhat different or not existent on the House side.
On the bottom of page R8, we have another Senate-only provision that would enact the uniform labor standards for employers in Minnesota. And it would be retroactive to January 1st of 2017.
Beginning on R9, there are several House-only sections, specifically sections 9 through 15. This is part of the labor and industry housekeeping language. It eliminates old OSHA language and increases maximum fines for OSHA compliance to comply with federal requirements. Similarly, beginning on page R11, House Sections 16 to 19 are also House only. These are also DLI housekeeping provisions. This allows emails to be used for notices in addition to existing methods, and clarifies the definition. On R14, there's another House-only provision. This clarifies existing requirements for the accessibility of public buildings. And on R15, House-only sections 21 and 22, again, this is DLI housekeeping language. And specifically, this would require plumbers to display their name and license number on their vehicle and strikes outdated language. On R15, House Section 23, another house-only provision, would require solar contractors to be licensed residential contractors in addition to electrical licensing so that their work would be subject to the contractor recovery fund. And then on R17, House Section 24 and Senate Section 4, these are identical and both add a yearly continuing education requirement for certain licensed contractors to do an hour a year of business, or I believe it's an hour every 3 years, of education in business management. And R18 is its House Section 25, House Only. This is another provision from the DLI housekeeping bills. Clarifies that sanctions. It clarifies that sanctions for working without a license or letting a license lapse can also apply to unlicensed individuals. And on R19, House Section 26 and Senate Section 5, this is the other half of the retainage sections that Ms. Doyle-Fontaine mentioned earlier, the first section in this article. And these would apply to private construction, and they have similar, like Ms. Doyle-Fontaine said, they're moving in the same direction, but there are some substantial policy differences between them. Likewise, on R21, House Sections 27 to 29, and Senate Sections 6 to 8, these are identical in both the House and Senate bills, and this changes combative sports licensing, lowers fees, and removes some license requirements for those involved in combative sports. R22, which is House Section 30, is another House-only provision. Again, this is part of the DLI housekeeping bills. This repeals old rules on plumber advertising to conform to how other licensed individuals, such as electricians, are treated. And then finally, R34, Senate Section 9. This is a similar article because the House has language similar in the appropriations section.
Representative Mahoney, you had a...
Oh, yeah.
Did I miss something? We jumped from 22 to 34?
Yes, so this is another section that is policy for the Department of Labor and Industry. It's actually covered in the appropriations side by side. That's why you're not seeing it on the page there. And he's giving you the page number R34 in the appropriations side by side. We're just covering it here because it's also policy-like. And it was in the...
Mr. Chair, it was in the Senate language. It was more of a uncodified. In the House, they put it in the writers, so they matched it up in the appropriations section.
Thank you. Just wanted to get a chance to catch up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And specifically, that would allow DLI to use funds and the contract recovery funds for a statewide consumer awareness campaign about using licensed versus unlicensed contractors. And that's the end of the labor and industry side-by-side portion.
Members, any other questions? Okay. Seeing none.
We're now moving to the Commerce tab. And starting on page R1, House Section 1, this is House-only language. It's the first half of some state-level net neutrality requirements.
Mr. Chairman, members, Chris Stang on Commerce Committee Council. On page R2, page R3 on the top, there's two Senate-only sections. Mr. Mum will address this in more detail. They're actually spreadsheet issues, but they have the effect of moving some fees out of the general fund into the financial institutions account, and those fees include change fees for financial institutions, mortgage originator license fees, and money transmitter application and renewal fees. And there's a cap on assessments from one fiscal year to the other.
If you turn to page R3, House Sections 2 through 7, House-only language, these are limits on the interest, finance charges, and fees on short-term loans. Limits those to on short-term loans to 36% of APR. On page R7, House Sections 8 through 16, House-only language, this creates a student loan advocate to assist borrowers and establishes a student loan servicer licensing and requirements for that. Page R16, House Section 17, this is the second half of the House-only state-level net neutrality.
Any
The next tab you have is unemployment insurance. And I believe this is House-only language. But it's not. It's identical, however, to language the Senate passed in a standalone bill, Senate File 1547. This is just the recommendations of the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council. Next, we have the unclaimed property tab. This is Articles 17 through 25, House only. It's revisions to the unclaimed property procedures, House only. Flipping past the energy tab, as you guys covered that yesterday. And the final tab is a Senate-only article on real estate appraisal requirements.
Mr. Chair, members, on the real estate appraiser language, that reflects an agreement between the Department of Commerce and the North Star chapter of the Appraisal Foundation on changes to appraisal regulation in the state. And really the core of that change is on Section 5, which conforms state law to the education, examination, and experience requirements established by the AQB, or the Appraiser Qualifications Board of the Appraisal Foundation. And the rest of the sections are largely technical and conforming to that.
My apologies, two additional House-only sections that are in here. The tab Bureau Mediation, this is an article, House-only, that modifies the Public Employment Relations Board. And also, if you go to the Unemployment Insurance, there is a final on page R20 there. It's a House Section Article 15. This would allow school bus contractors to qualify for unemployment insurance over the summer. This is House-only language. I believe that is all of the policy articles we were supposed to cover.
Hey, do we have any questions regarding the commerce articles? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to the spreadsheets. Representative Mahoney.
I must have taken that spreadsheet with me to my office, and do we have an extra copy?
We do have an extra copy. Give us 1 second. Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, I didn't do this yesterday, but probably should have. Just a quick orientation of how the spreadsheet is organized. Of course, the rows represent the items of appropriation, and they're organized by agency and fund. And going left to right, the columns display the current biennium funding, the base appropriations for the upcoming two biennia, the governor's budget recommendations, the House position, the Senate position, and then the final three columns show the differences between the House and Senate positions. For any appropriation where there is a difference, the row is shaded, so that will help you identify those as we're moving through.
Mr. Chair, members, again, my name is Solveig Beckel, and I'm the House Fiscal Analyst. I'm going to start by going through some of the deed appropriations, or the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The first one, of course, is operating, but on line 5, you see discretionary spending, business and community development. Just want to briefly explain that. The House elected to use the approach of discretionary pools or discretionary spending, as you'll see on this spreadsheet. That means that all of those listed underneath this main discretionary spending heading are eligible for the funding that we have listed there. So, for example, on line 5, you can see that all 5 of those organizations are eligible for the for some of the $9.35 million there in fiscal year 20. Moving down the spreadsheet then, on line 12, you'll see the Minnesota Innovation Collaborative. This was one of the governor's recommendations, and then the components. The contaminated site cleanup, Center for Rural Policy and Development, Destination Medical Center, and Host Community Economic Development Program are ones in which the House and Senate have agreement, and those are base items. Next, we come to the White Earth Nation Integrated Business Development System. Here, it might give the impression that the Senate did not fund this. However, we do have some differences in the funds we use for funding. For example, this shows that the House has chosen to fund White Earth Nation, as an example, through the general fund. However, the Senate has funded this through the Workforce Development Fund. So as we go through the spreadsheet, just keep in mind that some of those may just be in different funds. Then Enterprise Minnesota, I believe that's a similar situation. The Manufacturing Performance Assessment, this is a new item that I believe goes along with Enterprise Minnesota. Rondo Community Land Trust, and the Metro Economic Development Association. A number of these were present in the governor's equity recommendations, and some just brought by the House. Then on line 25, we have another discretionary spending item. For this one, the organizations are eligible for a $2.865 million pool, but the Senate's are broken out a little differently.
On line 26 is an appropriation of $649,000 for child care business startups. This was a provision funded in the current biennium and in the governor's budget. And on line 27 is a grant to the Minnesota Initiative Foundations of $1.827 million in fiscal year 20. Both of these appropriations were originally in Senate File 2. And were added to this bill in the Finance Committee. On line 28 is a $1 million appropriation to NatureWorks in fiscal year 20.
On line 29 is the House funding for the Neighborhood Development Center. $150,000 of this in fiscal year 20 is a carve-out for specifically Greater Minnesota services. The next item is broadband for co-working spaces, so providing that $50,000 to bolster broadband for a co-working space. The next two items both are present in both the House and the Senate, though to different amounts. The Minnesota Job Creation Fund, the House has funded to the tune of $13.5 million over the biennium, and the Minnesota Investment Fund, the House has funded roughly $9 million over the biennium.
There is a language difference in the appropriation writers between the House and the Senate for the Minnesota Investment Fund. The Senate language is what was in the governor's bill, which allows a portion of the appropriation to be used for the redevelopment program should the department decide to do that. And that is something that was present in the 2017 jobs budget as well. On lines 35 and 36 are the carve-outs of the Minnesota Investment Fund appropriation for the Airport Infrastructure Renewal Program and the first in the Upper Midwest Robotics Hubs grants. And the remaining appropriations on page one are identical in both the House and Senate positions.
On page two, we move along to other funds. The contaminated site cleanup and development, that was simply in the base, and that comes from the remediation fund. For job training grants, the House added a provision for metropolitan job training grants, so there was an increase of $700,000 over the biennium for that program. And then, let's see, the rest of those programs are ones the House did not fund through the Workforce Development Fund or ones the House did not fund in this biennium. And, of course, you can see now the Senate's White Earth Nation appropriation in the Workforce Development Fund. Moving on to employment and training programs or the Workforce Development area of DEED, there is some base funding in terms of the Higher Ed Career Advising Program, the Rural Career Counseling Coordinators, and the Women Economic Importance. I've forgotten what that is, but the Women's Grants. And those are all base funding and are similar in the House and Senate. Moving on to line 83. This begins some of the new appropriations that appear exclusively in the House bill. The Washburn Center for Children, the Regional Center for Entrepreneurial Facilitation, the Inventory of Workforce Development Programs. This is for DEED to create that inventory of all the workforce development programs for looking for increased accountability. The next one down is Summit Academy, then Life Track, Youth Prize, which is also in this spreadsheet, I believe, as a Somali Youth Foundation, and then the YWCA is in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Then finally on line 92, you see another discretionary spending item. This is the largest in the general fund, and there are 11 organizations eligible for this funding.
On line 104 is a grant to Accessibility, Inc. That is in the Senate position only, and it is a $200,000 per year appropriation in fiscal years 20 and 21 only. Line 105 is an appropriation, a base appropriation from the general fund for grants to Southeast Asian communities. The Senate carries the base funding, and the House does as well, but it is from the Workforce Development Fund, so that appears later on line 142. And on lines 108 and 109 are appropriations for Ujamaa Place, which is in the House only, and the Youth at Work Grant Program. And the only difference between the House and the Senate on the Youth at Work Grant Program is that the Senate makes it ongoing funding, so it will show up in the fiscal year 22 and 23 base. The House appropriation is one time. On page 3, line 118 is a grant of $200,000 per year for fiscal 20 and 21 for the 180 degrees job readiness grants.
Then is a House appropriation for the Cook County Higher Education Board for $100,000 in fiscal year 20, and then Propel Nonprofits, which was formerly known as the Nonprofits Assistance Fund, that receives $1 million over the biennium.
Line 121 is an appropriation of $150,000 for the biennium to the Minnesota Grocers Association for their Carts to Careers program.
The next line is the American Indian Communities. Again, I believe the Senate funded this through the general fund. Then the International Institute of Minnesota New Americans in Training Program receives $700,000 over the biennium. Then the mental illness employment plan that the research staff mentioned earlier. Emerge Community Development, which was in the governor's recommendations, Minneapolis Foundation, and the Construction Careers Foundation, as well as community grants, Latino community, or CLUES. And then the House and Senate have the same level of funding for Twin Cities Rise, Hard to Train Individuals. And then we have another discretionary spending list. So these 10 organizations are all eligible for the $11.877 million over the biennium. Then is the Southeast Asian Communities, as Mr. Mum mentioned, the Hmong American Partnership, and then I believe it's the Senate's Displaced Homemaker Program, which the House had in the general fund.
Yes, and just to go back to lines 132 through 141, several of those appropriations are also in the Senate bill, only the Senate directly appropriates the funds rather than allowing the organizations to be eligible recipients under the discretionary appropriation. On lines 100, on line 145 is a $1 million appropriation for the Father Project. This was funded in the current biennium as well. And lastly, on line 146 is an appropriation to the Summit Academy OIC for $1 million over the next biennium. On line 148 is the Youth at Work Grant Program. The only difference between the House and the Senate here is the amounts. The House funds the program at $3 million higher than the Senate for the current biennium, and also makes it a one-time appropriation, so it is not present in the tails.
Then we have another discretionary pool, this one for youth programs. As you can see, a number of those received funding in the current biennium, but at the moment, or in the House's bill, all eight of these organizations would be eligible for the $10.1 million over the coming biennium. Then the Senate's Ujamaa, please.
The Senate directly appropriates $1.2 million to Ujamaa Place. The difference between the House and Senate here is that the House makes that appropriation with the general fund. The Senate uses workforce development fund money. And the same for the appropriation to the YWCA of St. Paul. That's present in the House bill from the general fund. Moving on to page four, the first difference between the House and the Senate position is on line 193. The Senate position for vocational rehabilitation is $500,000 a year less than the House's for from the general fund. And on line 194, the Centers for Independent Living Grants, the Senate appropriates the base funding amounts. The House appropriates $1.5 million above the base for the upcoming biennium and the tails. On lines 197 and 198 reflect a change in the Senate position above the base. The fiscal year 20 amount for the employment support services for people with mental illness is increased by $2 million, and that is designated for to be used in first in unserved areas, and it is available for 4 years. This was a provision that was contained in Senate File 1 and was amended into this bill during the finance hearing.
The next change on this page is on line 211. This is Deed's paid family and medical leave program that would be established through the House bill. So for paid family and medical leave, the appropriations would be $10.5 million the first year of the biennium, roughly $22 million the second year, for a total of $32.5 million over the biennium, and then a $28.277 million appropriation in the tails. Also included is a fiscal year 24 amount in the House position of $11.52 million. Next is the provision for Minnesota's dairy farmers. This is, the appropriation is on line 218, and the House bill appropriates $10 million in fiscal year 20 for the Dairy Assistance Investment and Relief Initiative, or DARI, and I believe that there is a Senate provision in ag and housing, so it not in this bill, however. Turning the page, so top of page 5, then, you can see the Minnesota Investment Fund one-time exception, the House and Senate match for the most part on that language, and then you can see the revenue generated for the paid family and medical leave program, as well as additional expenditures from the special revenue fund. And then you can see the totals for all of the Department of Employment and Economic Development.
On page 6 are the Department of Labor and Industry appropriations. First change is on line 255. These are appropriations for wage theft prevention. Both are an increase over the base, but the House funds the initiative at $2,046,000 per year, and the Senate funds it at $1.5 million per year.
Then there is additional general fund money appropriated to DALI for paid family and medical leave for the areas of outreach, education, and technical assistance, and enforcement and administration. And then there is House File 11, Earned Sick and Safe Time, which is appropriated roughly $8 million over the coming biennium, and also has money in the tails.
Line 259 is a Senate-only provision that appropriates $500,000 one time to come up with a plan to address labor trafficking enforcement. On line 264 is the Helmets to Hard Hats appropriation from the Workforce Development Fund. The only difference here is in the amounts. The House funds it at $400,000 per year and makes it ongoing. The Senate has one-time funding of $300,000 per year in fiscal years 20 and 21 only.
Moving down to the General Support Division, on line 274, the House funds the IT systems modernization request from the Department of Labor and Industry, where the Senate does not.
On line 277, the Senate bill funds the pipeline project at its base funding amounts. That provision was not carried in the House bill.
Right. Then moving on to other expenditures and revenues for the Department of Labor and Industry, you can see revenue from wage theft and paid family and medical leave in that area, as well as the OSHA federal penalty conformance that is present in the House bill, the solar contractor licensing revenue and expenditures, and then the House and Senate, of course, share the combative sports fee reductions. Do you want to talk about the contractor recovery?
On line 295 is the Contractor Recovery Fund consumer awareness campaign that Mr. Weeks outlined. This is not an appropriation. It just requires the department to use funds that already exist in the account to conduct this awareness campaign. Difference between the House and the Senate language is that the Senate limits the amount that can be spent to $500,000 per year. The House bill does not contain that limitation. On page 7, there are the subtotals for the Department of Labor and Industry, and beginning on line 317 are the appropriations for the Bureau of Mediation Services. There are two differences between the House and the Senate. One is on line 319. The House provides an operating budget increase of $224,000 for each biennium that was not carried in the Senate. And then on line 325.
The House also funds the Public Employee Relations Board operation increase, $560,000 each year. Then you can see the Bureau of Mediation Services totals. And then the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, you can see that on line 336, the House also funded the operating increase, and the Senate chose not to include that provision.
Page 8 shows agencies that are within each committee's jurisdiction, but for which there are no changes, differences between the House and Senate bills. Those are appropriations for the Public Utilities Commission, and which we discussed yesterday, and the spending amounts for the Public Facilities Authority, the IRRR, and Destination Medical Center open appropriation. On page 9 begins the Department of Commerce appropriations. We walked through everything up until line 404 yesterday. Beginning on line 405 are some House-only provisions.
Yes. On line 406, this is the operating budget for the Financial Institutions Division of Commerce. The Senate columns are blank. This is because of the Senate provision changing the funding source for financial institutions and moving that to a special revenue account for financial institutions. The House bill did not include this language, and so it funds the operations to $867,000 over the biennium. Then the House also provides funding for the organization Prepare and Prosper, which provides education for financial services. Then the student loan advocate appropriations are on line 408. And on line 409, the House provides funding for Exodus Lending, which works with people who have engaged with payday lenders unsuccessfully. Next is administrative services. Again, the House bill funds the operating increases. It also funds the litigation expenses for the SafeLight case. Then I believe the next change is the rulemaking, and you can see that the House funds that to $66,000 over the biennium.
Line 421 shows a small appropriation for the Real Estate Appraisal Advisory Board that was established in the provision Mr. Stang outlined earlier. On page 10, on line 425 is the difference between the House and the Senate is that the House has an operating budget increase for the Commerce Enforcement Division. The Senate does not carry that. On line 426 is a difference in the amounts for health care enforcement. The Senate roughly doubles that appropriation for each biennium.
And on line 427, the House bill funds the Seniors and Vulnerable Adults Financial Education Program, which also received funding in the current biennium.
On line 436 is another difference where the House bill contains an operating budget increase for the Department of Commerce's insurance division. The Senate did not carry this. And on line 439 is a $30,000 appropriation in fiscal year 20 for membership to the National Conference of Insurance Legislators. This was not in the base, but it was funded in the current biennium. And on lines 454 through 461 are various revenue changes.
The ones starting on 454 are present in the House bill. This includes the utility grid reliability assessment extension, which is part of what we discussed yesterday. And if you jump down to line 456, here we have the revenue indicated in the unclaimed property modernization initiative. Our fiscal notes suggest that this will yield a revenue of $13.78 million in the first biennium and $27.560 million in the tails. And I do just want to mention on the previous page, the bottom of page 9, the funding for the unclaimed property modernization is rolled up in the operating cost increase for administrative services.
Lines 458 and 459 were discussed during yesterday's walkthrough. Lines 460 and 461 show the effect of the financial institutions fees that Mr. Stang discussed. Currently, the broker-dealer fee and the money transmitter fees, application and license renewal fees, are deposited in the general fund. A change in the Senate provision would redirect those fee revenues to the financial institutions account, which is a special revenue fund that the Department of Commerce's Financial Institution Division uses to fund their operations. So that would have a $550,000 per year reduction in general fund revenue and a corresponding increase for the financial institutions account. And that's what's shown on those two lines. On page 11 are the totals for the Department of Commerce, and then a few appropriations.
And then there are just a few more appropriations present in the House bill to other agencies. The paid family and medical leave fiscal note came back with a cost for the Office of Management and Budget. Same with earned sick and safe time. And then the Supreme Court also had a cost for paid family and medical leave. And then the Attorney General also had a cost for wage theft prevention. So you can see the appropriations to those agencies that this committee or combined committee typically does not fund. After that, I believe we are on to what we covered yesterday.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to point out a couple things that are not on the spreadsheet but are differences in the appropriations articles between the House and the Senate. The Senate position modified a number of the Department of Employment and Economic Development appropriations that are typically available until expended, and also allow the department to retain a percentage of the appropriation for administrative costs. The Senate bill attempted to do two things: make those appropriations available until a fixed amount of time. So it changed the availability of the appropriations for, like, the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Program, Minnesota Investment Fund, Job Skills Partnership Program, for 4 years, and it also directly changed the amount that the department can retain for administrative costs to 2%. And rather than specifying a percentage, the Senate writers identify the dollar amount that 2% would equate to. So you won't see that on the spreadsheet, but those are language differences between the appropriations writers.
Hey, do we have any questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. So, members, we have a number of motions to adopt regarding the SAMES and a couple of similar provisions that we've been able to work out. As we're going through these motions, if there's an objection, please let me know, and I'd ask that you connect with the chair representing that committee on the conference committee to work it out.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Wong? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, Mahoney. Thank you. Sorry, I didn't see your hand. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair. I got the broken mic again. Mr. Chair, are we ready to make some of these motions?
We are, Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, we have a couple that are I'll make the motion. I move to adopt the House language in Article 4, page R14, section 14, line 87.9. to 100.27.
Okay.
It is the Tarot extension.
Okay. Ms. Doyle Fontaine, did you have any comments on that?
I believe he's read it correctly, but it's on page R14 of the Jobs Economic Development Policy, and it is the section that goes on for quite a while. So it's section 5, line 31.1. Well, actually, let's do the House language, I believe. I'm not sure if that's what he moved. Yep. And so section 14, 87.19 to, tell me what it is, 100.27.
Any questions? Any objections? Okay.
Which article is that?
That is Article 4.
House side, yeah, Article 4.
Just a reminder, adoption requires a majority of each body separately. We'll just take one voice vote. Chair will... Chair will make the call. All those in favor of adopting Article 4, House language, Article 4, page R1 through R4, section 14, lines 87.19 to 100.27, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move... This provision would be in the same section, the MIF one-time exemption, and that would, I would move the House language in Article 4, page R36, section 20, line 112, I'm sorry, lines 112.16 to line 112.27.
Ms. Doyle Fontaine.
No, he read it correctly.
Thank you. Members, the Senate will accede to the House language to add the minority leaders to the report. I believe that's the the difference between this. Are there any questions or discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, this, I would like to make the motion, and it concerns the Youth Skills Training Program to limit grants to $100,000 per local partnership. The language should be the same. It is, I move to adopt the House language in Article 8, page R2, section 2 and 3, lines 146.28 to 148.2. And I'm happy to announce I read that without my glasses from here.
Hey.
I didn't get it quite right.
148.2. Oh, there we go. Okay, any questions on the Youth Skills Training Program? Okay, seeing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a recommendation concerning Workers' Comp Advisory Council recommendations. I move to adopt the House language in Article 8, page R4, sections 4 and 5, lines 148.21 to 150.11.
Okay. Members, this is the Workforce Advisory Council's or Work Comp Advisory Council's recommendations. Are there any questions? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, this is, I will make a motion concerning the 1 hour of continuing education requirements for certain licensed contractors. I move to adopt the House language in Article 8, page R17, section 24. These are lines 160.23 to 161.4. Certainly. This is Article 8, page R17, section 24, lines 160.23 to 161.4.
Senator Dames, there's only one line on the Senate side of that page, and then it continues down. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? That motion carries. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
This is the competitive sports licensing fee decrease language. And I'll move to adopt the House language in Article 8, page R21, section 21. Lines 164.19 to line 166.2. We're going to make it simpler to have mixed martial arts. And I think the two of us should go with the commissioner to one of the mixed martial arts matches, just for the fun of it.
I would love to, Representative Mahoney.
What's that? No, we're all happy now.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dames.
I would move that you compete.
We're not taking a vote on that.
Mr. Chair?
That's an improper motion, Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, are you sure it would be a tag team, you and me versus Mahoney and Wagenia?
My money's on Gene.
All right. We have a same provision. This was a recommendation by the Department of Labor and Industry. Any questions or objections? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I would like to make the motion concerning the Contractor Recovery Fund Awareness Campaign. I move to adopt the Senate language in Article 1, page R34, Section 9, lines 51.1 to 51.6.
Mr. Alfontaine, can you, or Mr. Mum, can you just talk about that one more time?
Mr. Chair, members, it's in the appropriations article. That's where it was matched up. And the Senate has some uncodified session law language that provides for the Department of Labor and Industry to use some of the Contractor Recovery Fund dollars that are in the fund, but only up to $500,000 for this public awareness campaign. The House has it in the writers, and it's however everyone thinks it makes most sense. And this, under this proposal, it would be that uncodified session law.
Thank you, Mr. Alfontaine. Any other questions or objections to this motion? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries.
And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm done with my motions for the afternoon.
Okay. Are there any other motions? Senator Simonson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and we made some good progress there, so maybe it's time we shift gears and try something in the energy field. No pun intended. We walked through a number of these provisions yesterday, and I think trying to pick out some of the areas where there is perhaps some room for agreement between the two bodies, areas where perhaps we can come to relatively quick agreement on. I want to just talk for a minute about the subject of energy storage. I think this is a very important provision that both bodies have obviously considered throughout the session. And as we look forward to changes in energy and how we produce energy and how we consume energy, how it impacts our ratepayers on both the residential side as well as the commercial industrial side. Obviously, energy storage is going to be a critical component of that mechanism going forward. So as I look at some of our same similars, we have two provisions that come to mind. We have the Energy Storage System Pilot Project. We have very similar language between the House and the Senate. This would essentially allow the public utility to petition the PUC to recover the costs, as well as we have the provision with the energy storage system assessment. That language, I believe, is the same. But I think in order to kind of capture the whole package of storage, I would like to have us consider not only those two same similar provisions, but also incorporate the Senate definition of storage, as well as the Senate study language, which comes with an appropriation from the RDA, which we can talk about more. But just to get it out there, I'd like to make a motion, Mr. Chair, and then we can see if there's further discussion.
Okay, so if I could have somebody recap the motion.
Has made motion yet.
I haven't made it yet.
Oh, I thought you did make a motion.
I was trying to talk slow and let everybody get ready. The motion would be that I would move to adopt the Senate language, Article 10, Section 3, page R13, lines 107.18 through 108.27. And I'd like to fold these all four together, so I'll keep going. Section 4 on pages R57 through 59, lines 108.28 through 110.12. Section 5 on pages R63 and 64, lines 110.13 through 110.22. And finally, Section 13, which is on page R100 and 101, lines 125.21 through 126.22.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
Can I ask Senator Simonson to repeat those page and line numbers, please?
Senator Simonson.
Mr. Chair, there's four of them. So the first one would be page R13, lines 107.18 through 108.27. Next one is on R57 through R59. This will be lines 108.28 through 110.12. The next one will be on page R63 and 64, lines 110.13 through 110.22. And lastly, on page R100 and 101, lines 125.21 through 126.22. And Mr. Chair, I missed this on the first one, but on the appropriation side by side, section 15, R41 would be lines 127.1 through lines 127.5. That would capture the appropriation.
What were those line numbers again, Senator Simonson?
On the appropriations?
Yeah.
Section 15, R41, lines 127.1 through 127.5.
Mr. Chair? Representative Wagenius.
Some of these things were ones that you've not put on the
You're
list.
You're talking to you, Mike.
Before, I would like for us to take a short recess.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius, we will take a short recess. Representative Wagenius, how long would you like us to approximately take?
10 minutes, please.
All right. We'll stand in recess until 2 p.m. Okay, I'd like to call the committee back to order. Representative Wagenius, did you have a, or who am I, we have a motion on the floor. Senator Simonson.
Mr. Chair, that is my motion. I think it's just open for discussion.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius. Or Mr. Representative Stevenson, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Simonson. The House thinks that this storage language is very important, and we really appreciate the Senate's putting it on the table. And I think that there's a lot of the language here that we are very ready to accept and willing to move forward with the Senate language. Of the items that the that Senator Simonson raised, the language on R13, lines 107.18, 108.27, on pages R63 and 64, lines 110 through 110.13 through 110.22, and on pages R100 and 101, lines 125.21 through 126.22, the House is very agreeable to. With respect to the other two sections that Senator Simonson put on the table, we would make a couple of modifications at this time. And so, Mr. Chair, I would actually move to amend Senator Simonson's amendment. And as to page 57 through 59, R57 through R59, I would move that we adopt only lines 109.23 to 110.11. As to Senator Simonson's final section that he put on the table, that's page R41, lines 127.1 through line 127.5, I would move to amend Senator Simonson's motion by omitting that section. The House position is that we are not ready to adopt any appropriations from either the general fund or the RDA at this time until we have a policy agreement and until we have a general fund target for this committee. So that would be my motion to amend Senator Simonson's amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Stevenson, I appreciate where you're coming from, and I appreciate I very much understand and know the work that your side has put into your bill, and you need to defend your positions, and I very much understand that. But I think when we look at the scope of the bill and the number of provisions that are ahead of us that are going to be challenging, my position here in the minority, I can see that this is an area where I think that we can reach a quick conclusion and a quick agreement, and that's why I made the motion the way that I made it. But I think that appropriation is part of the package, right? And I think, this Senate file, we passed off the floor with a 63-0 vote. I don't think it's controversial. It may not necessarily fit in with exactly where you're going in the direction that the House wants to go, but I will just tell you, as a Senate Democrat, I think that this is an opportunity where we can come together and make some progress. So as much as I appreciate where you're going with your amendment, I think that I offered this as a package, and I wouldn't be comfortable accepting that as a friendly amendment. And I would just say that if you want to pursue the amendment to the amendment, that I would withdraw the underlying amendment.
Mr. Senator Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree with Senator Simonson. This really is part of a package deal. The big issue here, it seems to me, the language is a little, I think we had somewhat of a discussion on dropping some earlier language that really is already in state statute anyway. This is an RDA appropriation. It's outside of the confines of a budgetary agreement. It's $150,000 out of $34 million annually that we get. It's a very non-consequential amount of money that can do an actually a lot of good when it comes to energy storage. So I'm disappointed that we can't have agreement on this today, but I appreciate Senator Simonson bringing this forward. And particularly, it's my bill that we did get support from Senator Marty and Senator Dibble, who are sometimes very difficult in getting to agree to Senator Osmek's bills, to say the least. So I'm pretty disappointed, but I guess we will have further discussion on this.
Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to the limitation on the definition, But that doesn't change the policy outcome at all. We just removed language that didn't line up on the House side because we were concerned that it might preclude our definitions in other sections. So we just narrowed the scope of the line items to be only related to the energy storage section. So we don't have any agreement on policy. The only discussion is on finance, and we funded in the general fund and you funded in RDA. So that's a difference that requires us to either get a target, as Representative Stevenson said, or to start having a conversation about the entire funding of the RDA package, neither of which we're prepared to do today. So we're ready to move on the entirety of the energy storage policy. We also fund the study in our package, so I think it's fair to say that we would be supportive of funding it in the final product. It's just a question of whether it's going to be from the general fund or the RDA. So I would respectfully request, Senator Simonson, that you keep your motion forward, and so that we can at least move forward with the policy that we all agree to.
Senator Simonson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I appreciate where you're coming from, but I think it's really a critical component that we understand the scope of the work that's in front of us. I mean, there are literally dozens of things that don't even remotely match up that we're going to spend potentially a fair amount of time debating. If we are in agreement that the future of energy storage is important, I think in the absence of a general fund target, I mean, I think we all can agree that we don't have a general fund target, and B, it's probably unwise of us to pursue general fund appropriation acceptance until we have that target. This is a, as Senator Osmick said, this is a minute amount of money out of the RDA, and I think the original motion was to take the whole package of storage, get it done, and get it out of our way so that we can focus on other things. But if we're still going to leave some components of that out there to be discussed later, then I think that discussion will have to happen later, and I would just withdraw the motion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Simonson. The motion is withdrawn. Senator or Representative Wong, did you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do. We do have the identical language on the property assessed clean energy provisions for commercial property, and so I'm hoping that we can adopt the language where it is the same. So I would move that we adopt the House language under Article 29, Section 48 on page R80, as well as the House language Article 29, Section 49 on R80, and House language Article 29, Section 50 on R81, as well as the House language Article 29, Section 51 on R81.
Okay. Representative Long moves adoption of House Articles 48, 49, 50, and 51 regarding PACE on pages R80 through R81. Any questions or discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries. Are there any other motions, questions, or comments? Senator Long, or Representative Long.
No problem. Mr. Chair, we had a few technical language changes that we shared with the Senate yesterday. One of them is an area where we'd like to accede to the Senate technical language change. That's on page R91. That's not the right reference. Looks like I got it wrong. R87. This is updating an outdated reference to now include the renewable development account, and the House thinks that the Senate did a good job in updating that outdated reference. So I would like to move that we accede to the Senate language in Section 28 and Section 29. On pages R87 and R88.
Okay, Representative Long moves adoption of Senate sections 28 and 29 on pages R87 through R88 of the energy provision. Are there any questions or comments? Okay, Seeing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Long.
There's one other provision when we walked through the walkthrough yesterday that was removing obsolete language that was in the House provision. This is on page R48. It's referring to a goal from 2010. We are later than 2010, so the goal is no longer needed. So I would move that we adopt the House language on page R48, section 22, lines 284.19 to 284.24.
Any questions or comments? Okay, motion is to adopt changes on House Section 22, starting on page R47, to adopt House language on lines 284.19 through 284.24. Is that correct, Representative Long?
Yes.
Okay. Without objection, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries.
Mr. Chair, one more technical amendment where we had the same language in both of our bills. The reference in my notes is wrong, so if you could give me a second, I'll pull it up. Here we go. I found it, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your indulgence. On page R6, line 6. 64.18 to 64.20 in the Senate section 1, I would move that we accede to the Senate language for the correction from direct to alternating current, which is a technical change to bring this into conformance with how we typically refer to nameplate capacity for solar. Yes, the motion would be that we accede to the Senate language on lines 64.18 to 64.20 on page R6.
All right, 64.18 to what was the second page number?
64.20, just those three lines.
64.20. So we're only talking about the first portion of the section.
Correct. The first sentence is the technical change.
So, Mr. Chair, member, so we would be, it would be on R6, we would just take the Senate section, which just changes the direct to alternating current. So that there would be no other changes to that section, just that one word change.
So we would be we'd actually be adopting the entire section 1, line 64.
That's not my motion, Mr. Chair. There are other differences in that paragraph. I'm just suggesting that we accept the technical change, which is in the first sentence, 6.418 to 64.20.
Then the Senate would
Representative Long.
Then the Senate would object.
Okay. Then I'll withdraw the motion.
All right. Motion is withdrawn. Any other motions, questions, or comments? Okay. Seeing none, Representative Mahoney, did you want to talk about our schedule tomorrow?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Our schedule tomorrow, we'll meet here at 12:30. Senator Pratt and I will meet to put together the what we're going to accomplish tomorrow or attempt to accomplish. And hopefully we can continue to make some progress. And let's hope that our leadership makes more progress than we make.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. And members, just to piggyback a little bit on what Representative Mahoney said, we've agreed to kind of keep 12:30 as a standing time, understanding that our leaders may influence our schedule, but at least tentatively for those sitting on other conference committees to be able to know that this is our standing time at 12:30. Is there any other business that needs to come before the committee? Okay, seeing none, we stand adjourned until 12:30 tomorrow.